Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast. We're talking today with Michael Flavin, who is the Director of Cloud Technology Sales at Salex Information Technology, a managed services and cloud technology company based in Camarillo, California. Welcome.
Hey, thanks so much, Sherry.
So you've been sounding the alarm that firms contracting or subcontracting with the Department of Defense face serious challenges if they're not compliant with federal cybersecurity regulations, such as the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulation Supplement, or DFARS, or the National Institute of Standards and Technology Special Publication 800-171. Could you give us some background on this issue, just to bring the listeners up to speed?
Yeah, well, sure. Thank you again for the introduction, and hello, everybody. Yeah, so the alarm really is just sharing information with peers from, Salex Information Technology and Salex Solutions, Inc. is a defense contractor and technology services provider. And we attend shows like Navy Gold Coast or Sea Airspace, and I'm sure a lot of peers listening to this probably attend. And you've got everyone from Boeing down to, your smaller SMBs with 20 employees that make ruggedized servers for attack submarines, for example. But the big picture is really what some people have heard. On the defense side, everybody kind of understands we have to have better cybersecurity. But on the supply chain side, so the 300,000 defense industrial base contractors that are basically, in essence, the entire defense industrial base supply chain for our military and everything that gets made have now kind of fallen under the new CMMC cybersecurity model certification standard. And it's not necessarily myself sounding alarm, but there is concern there that based on what Katie Arrington has said, the DOD undersecretary for on the acquisition side, I probably didn't get her title perfect there, but what her personnel spoke to, and Jimmy Smith, I think on the Navy side, for the small business representation at Space Coast or Navy Coast, Gold Coast, for example, spoke to was this new standard that's coming down. And the reason why they're doing this, I think, is twofold. One, the previous attestation, self-attestation that, you may have heard of, and business DOD subs and primes are required to do, was not necessarily fair or doing the right thing, and it wasn't enforceable. And I'll give you an example. In an interview or a webinar that I watched with Ms. Arrington, she mentioned a hypothetical Company A and Company B. Company A complies with 80 of the 110 NIST 800-171 controls, and Company B complies with all of them, all 110, and they're in good shape. But Company A's costs are probably going to be lower because they're not, fully compliant. So you've got a company that's fully compliant with this, and then another one whose costs may be lower, but there's no teeth to say you can't work with someone that doesn't take cybersecurity seriously. So it was a little bit of a, conflict of interest, or it wasn't aligned in the best way. So the way I understand Ms. Arrington explained it is, they want to have a new baseline, and that's where the cybersecurity maturity model comes in. Of the 300,000 defense industrial-based contractors in the supply chain, her estimate was about 290,000 don't have all of the controls in place, those 110, for example. And so what they want to do is have a new baseline that has a certification, not an inside, a self-attestation, but an actual third-party certification process whereby they can be certified from a level one, which would be like the baseline. Let's say you have people doing maintenance on lawns or cleaning around a base, or a level four where there's a SCIF and there's top secret research, test and development, radar, missile software, those type of things where it's top secret compartmentalized stuff. Certified so that those vendors are at a level that is basically going to support the kind of work that they need to do. So her thoughts are this program is something that they can roll out, and it may take 4 years, but they have a carrot and stick approach, if you will. It's an allowable expense now, which means that, you know, they can write this off. I mean, I'm not a tax guy, but in order to write it off against the government and get reimbursed, that was the first big pillar they wanted to remove. And the second one is that as far as the RFP process and where the, I think the alarms you'd mentioned earlier are probably going to be, is instead of three pillars in an RFP, the cost, the schedule, and the performance, there'll be a fourth now, and that's cyber hygiene. So the alarm, I think, for anybody listening to this that is manufacturing or providing services for DOD, they need to be in alignment coming this year for an RFP that's going to say, how do you rank as far as cyber hygiene for this? And if they don't, they're not going to qualify. They could be disqualified. Now, it could take several years to implement this, but the understanding from on the defense side, on the acquisition side, is that at a point, and they point to this year, that will start showing up in bid. That actual component, the fourth pillar, will be in there. So that's kind of the genius of everything. That's the big picture.
So you mentioned that they're going to have a third party determine which level the various contractors achieve. Have they selected a third party?
That's right. Yeah, it would be an independent third party to do the certification. And depending on what they're bidding for, I think it would be a collaborative process to see what level, CMMC level, they get certified in. And it could be, again, that they only need like a level one because they're just providing maintenance personnel or some other low-level work. But if it's a three or four where it's highly sensitive data, that third party would work with them to make sure that they can qualify for that.
Now, this would be supposition, but rules that come in for one agency in the federal government often spread to other agencies. Do you see that the federal government will adopt some sort of similar system for other agencies that contracts would, to the, say, the Department of Transportation, perhaps, would have to adhere?
That is a great question. I mean, there is the risk management framework that's out there. Are you familiar on the DOD side?
No.
But it would make sense that, it, you know, on the defense side, that they would have the similar controls in place to house the same information that they're getting, you know, from those vendors or sharing, you know, sensitive information.
Yeah, the problem, it seems to me, is everyone is so connected now that the vulnerabilities could often be unseen because one of your partners way down the road is not as compliant as everyone else is, but they're so far down the chain that you don't know it.
Yeah, and that's the huge risk. And unfortunately, about $600 billion is lost in intellectual property and wealth every year from the United States to our adversaries. The DOD budget is $700 billion, just over, what is it, $700, $750 billion? So we're losing the equivalent of our Department of Defense budget every year. And this is why we see the joint strike fighter, the F-35, the Chinese have completely got it. And whatever they had to reverse engineer or figure out, they probably figured out. So that's a huge investment and loss on our part.
So you mentioned, a large percentage of contractors are perhaps not compliant. Do they know they're not compliant, or is this something that they need to be educated about?
Well, I think it's the latter. A lot of them might have heard, a lot of them have not. And so it's scary for many reasons. You mentioned like one of your flow down vendors in your supply chain. If you're, you know, a mid-size or a large size or a behemoth like a Boeing, and you have a handful of vendors in your supply chain that make key parts for F-18s, for example. They get to a big bid with the government and come to find out, one of your subs, isn't a level four because this is highly sensitive software for missile intercept, or air to air. They'd be out of luck. So the bigger companies are probably spending a lot of money in doing this, but that's the worst nightmare scenario in the supply chain. Katie Arrington, in her recent webinar that I viewed, pointed out to the fact that a lot of them just don't know outright. And so that's why they are creating a program to go through, get the word out to everybody through every branch of service, and through all the defense industrial base folks to get this certification. But at some point, the rubber is going to hit the road where people can't bid on stuff. And that's probably where you're going to see people scrambling, like, oh, we can't recompete. We can't do net new bids because we're not a level three and we need to get these controls in place. And they're going to be scrambling to find one of these CMMC, like Salix IT. We can help, we've helped them. Folks get their certifications and get the controls in place so they can bid and continue to work. So it's a bit of a scary scenario. And the onus is really on the defense side to get the word out that this new cyber hygiene, the cybersecurity maturity model is out there, and it's going to really start biting people in the butt pretty soon.
Is there,
if they don't, not comply.
Is there an accommodation for different sized firms, a small, say, dozen person firm or even smaller than that versus a large firm, and say in our business, maybe a Jacobs or an AECOM with tens of thousands of employees? It would seem to me that you'd mentioned earlier the cost, the price to do this can be high. Is there an accommodation for a small firm that doesn't have to reach a certain level?
Not that I've seen. And that specific question, I think, was asked all the way up to Katie Arrington's office. And I think the answer was, while we appreciate that, the DIB has many small and mid-sized businesses, cybersecurity preempts us, from accommodating a small business if they're not able to comply. In other words, it trumps, the inability of a small business to, not comply, to be in non-compliance with this. Now, that being said, it is an allowable expense. So, it is something they could work with the government for, however it works, reimbursements, I'm not really sure. So it doesn't preclude them from that, but I think they were pretty clear that they're drawing a line in the sand, and it's going to be these certifications. And if people that can't meet it, regardless of their size, they will be excluded. They will be not allowed to bid.
And that in the drawing of the line in the sand, you made the point that it's not going to be set on a certain day in the near future, just because of the size of the problem. That it's going to be a sort of a rolling line in the sand, so to speak?
It could be. You could start to see, I have seen the Katie Arrington's office point to like Q2, Q3 of this year. You may see it in RFIs as soon as January, they said. But the entire rollout, she believed, could take till 2025. And that's just because of the nature of the size of, 300,000 entities, getting them compliant with 110 controls. That's a lot of work and a lot of time. And I'm sure they'll have to deal with all these vendors and applications and third parties and appeals and reimbursements and all of that. It's a massive program. And if you look at something similar like GDPR, the European data privacy, it blew past its deadline, but lo and behold, like today, if you work with, let's say you have a contracting firm that does business in the US and Western Europe, you'll know if you use Amazon Web Services, for example, you can't host data that can actually leave that country. They have very tight privacy laws, similar to the California Privacy Act. Consumer Privacy Act. It took years. It probably took 3 or 4 years for them, but it's in place and it's got teeth and it's impacting businesses we work with, like law firms, defense contractors that have overseas, European presence. So they realize it's going to take time, but the framework is there and the reward is there as far as it's an allowable expense and you can continue to do business as long as you get the controls in place and are certified.
Yeah, I would think it would become, yes.
It could take till 2025, they think.
Yeah, but I would imagine that for any size firm, it would be a competitive advantage to have achieved these certifications.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, in the first maybe couple of years, if someone's asleep at the switch, one of your competitors, or they're bogged down because they're having, maybe they don't get a good consultant to roll this out, expeditiously, or they're having trouble, let's say, with their internal IT staff implementing multi-factor authentication or SIM SOC monitoring, just a couple of things that are good controls that are included in those 110. You've got a leg up on them for sure.
So that using an example of just an engineering firm that it either has federal contracts, DoD contracts in this case, or is looking to do that and recognizes that they are not compliant, what would they need to do?
Well, a firm like that, the first thing they need to do is have really an overall cyber hygiene review against the NIST controls from a third party. So we're going to look at things like everything from policies and procedures to the actual controls that are in place, from firewalls to asset and inventory management, encryption, multi-factor authentication, how they control information end-to-end, those type of things. And you might do vulnerability and pen testing, depending on what level they need to be at. And then they'll get an overall report. And then from there, the technology folks can go to work. And that could be their internal staff if they have those skills in implementing endpoint detection and response and SIM SOC monitoring, tools like Splunk. We use Perch. It depends. And they just need to be able to implement and then actually execute on monitoring, for example. So if they have those resources organically, they can roll that out. They could work with a company like Salix IT, where we'll do all the above. We'll bring in the third party, get an independent assessment, and then our team can do all the controls and then create a POAM, plan of action and milestones to identify what's already done, because there will be inevitably a decent amount of controls in place. And then let's say there's 30 more to get implemented, actually have that in place so that company will know, hey, by the end of Q2 this year, we'll have everything implemented, all 110 controls, and we expect to be a level 3 certified vendor. And then, if that supports their business outcome, because they're never going to bid on anything that's a level 4, they'd be good to go. But what they really need to know is this is not self-attestation model anymore. So the inside IT team, while they could be part of the execution, and they will definitely be a key and integral part of that, there's going to be a third party that will come in as a consultancy and identify by gap analysis their vulnerabilities and what technical controls are missing, and then company like us, to help them implement all of those controls if they don't have that expertise in-house.
And then after your firm has done that, is your statement that they are now in compliance sufficient, or does a third party need to come back in and look at the firm again to make sure it's compliant?
I've seen both. The optimal is where one entity would do all of the work in the certification. A lot of it can be done remotely. But yeah, you would want a final, not attestation, but check to make sure all those controls are in place. And then probably annually, you'd want to keep that updated.
This would be a hard question to answer, but I'll ask it anyway. How long would this process take for a firm?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it is hard because when you mention a Parsons or, you know, an L3 Harris or what have you, when you have 10,000 employees and you roll out, you know, these tools or mobile device management or whatever it is you need to have in place, that could be a long time. You know, the bigger the company, I would say sometimes, you know, it's going to be correspondingly longer duration. Our company took about 6 months. I mean, our tech team was just nose down on it, and it was hard because organizationally, you know, everybody says like, hey, they're working on, you know, the compliance and this stuff. So that was us, and we're about 600 employees.
And you guys are aware of what's going on.
Well, that's true. Yeah, we are. But we still brought in a third party, you know, to help us get all of that lined up. And it also is going to depend on the existing cyber hygiene. I'd say that's the other big factor, because if they're already maybe working with top secret compartmentalized and they've got 80 of these controls in place, 90 of these controls in place already, the 20 or 30 more incrementally may not be that huge of an issue. You know, it could be done pretty quickly. So it kind of just depends on what the gaps are, if that makes sense.
So just to sort of wrap up here, what if I'm a firm, and what's my first step?
Yeah, I would say you need to have someone identify, you know, a third party, meet with you and identify where your company wants to be and have that kind of gap assessment done. And from there, you could get a roadmap on, okay, here's the controls you need to do. The C-suite's going to need to say, I need this, just like an ISO audit. Like, I know it takes time, but can we get it done in 90 days? I mean, they're going to provide some kind of goal, and then you try and align that with, you know, how much work it is and how long they think that's going to take, and then implement those additional controls, and then wrap everything up and just have a final checkup to make sure that, you know, everything's good to go. And they can indeed, that third party can indeed do their kind of attestation that all of these things were done. This is how they're maintaining them. And from there, they'll be able to actually put on an RFP in that field, you know, cyber hygiene rating. Hey, we're three, and that's this particular RFP is a level three or higher. So we check the box now, and then they would just maintain that, you know, annually.
Great. Well, this is a big challenge. I appreciate your bringing it to our attention, and I'm sure that a lot of the listeners will take next steps to deal with for their own firms. Thanks very much.
Yeah, a pleasure. It is a big challenge, but you know, the risks are high if we don't protect our intellectual property and our you know, defense secrets. That's a national defense issue, and it's our money. I mean, that costs the average taxpayer $4,000 a year. That's $600 billion. That's $4,000 for all of us just lost, going out the door, going out the window, instead of, you know, reinvesting into our own defense. So hopefully we can all kind of as a community come together and get this all done. And if anybody wants to have a conversation with Salix IT, we'll be glad to help you with gap analysis and getting down that path.